हरिः ॐ सहनावतु सहनौ भुनक्तु सह वीर्यं करवावहै तेजस्विनावधीतमस्तु मा विद्विषावहै ॐ शान्ति शान्ति शान्तिः ॐ जय श्रीकृष्ण चैतन्य प्रभु नित्यानन्द श्री अद्वैत गदाधर शिव सरिगौर भक्तवृन्द हरे कृष्ण 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 हरे 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 राम 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 हरे हरे
Okay, page 119. Kamsa's ministers continued, King, we who are your adherents in all respects shall therefore kill the Vedic Brahmins, the persons engaged in offering sacrifices and austerities, and the cows that supply milk, from which clarified butter is obtained for the ingredients of sacrifice. The Brahmins, the cows, Vedic knowledge, austerity, truthfulness, control of the mind and senses, faith, mercy, tolerance, and sacrifice are the different parts of the body of Lord Vishnu, and they are the paraphernalia for a godly civilization. And so as demons, then they will very nicely understand what's actually proper and what's not. Being demons, they're committed to what's not proper, but it's not that they don't know what is proper. You know, like that. Srila Prabhupada comments, when we offer our obeisances to the personality of Godhead, we say, Namo Brahmanya Devaya Go Brahmanya Hitaya Cha Jagat Hitaya Krishnaya Govindaya Namo Namaha. When Krishna comes to establish real perfection in the social order, he personally gives protection to the cows and brahmanas. Go Brahmanya Hitaya Cha. This is his first interest, because without protection of the brahmins and the cows, there can be no human civilization, or no question of happy, peaceful life. Asuras, therefore, are always interested in killing the Brahmins and cows, especially in this age, Kali Yuga. Cows are being killed all over the world, and as soon as there is a movement to establish Brahminical civilization, people in general rebel. Thus they regard the Krishna conscious movement as a form of brainwashing. How can such envious persons be happy in their godless civilization? The Supreme Personality of Godhead punishes them by keeping them in darkness, birth after birth, and pushing them lower and lower into wretched conditions of hellish life, because they don't want to know Krishna, so therefore Krishna arranges that they won't know. Right? So they're in darkness. So let's say if you're born in India, you know something about Krishna. Right? It's available easily. It means you're surrounded, you constantly bump into it. Whether you want to take advantage of it or not, that's another thing. But for those who don't, then if you're born outside of India, then there's a good chance you won't even know about Krishna. You won't even know what's the soul, who God is, really, what's the creation, how the energies. You don't know anything. So you're in darkness. And then from there, you can just go farther and farther and farther into darkness, because that's the interest of the living entity. So, after being in that condition, then at some point the living entity decides this is not that advantageous, because it's not nice, right? Because it's not like the nature of the soul. So, being in contact with such low modes of nature, the living entity at some point then can see the difference and appreciate. You know, when they're in this inimical or envious kind of mood, then they think that that envious aspect is where the taste is. Because it gives them some meaning, some drive, you know, some goals. But after a while, they see the taste isn't as nice as the mode of goodness. So then they can start coming that way. Does that make sense? Then they'll become pious. So in other words, they'll go all the way down, and then they'll start back up on the wheel of samsara. So why they're coming up is because then they're getting more and more inclined to accept the Vedic principle. Does that make sense? Mm-hmm. Yes.
When you say that a soul, when he desires, you know, not to worship Krishna, so he goes into more and more darkness. But it can happen that because of they then bump into devotees and then they may take up Krishna consciousness.
Yeah, but that's outside of the circle of samsara. You understand?
Mm-hmm.
So it's outside of samsara. So if having done that, they come in contact with devotees and they're still determined to not be involved, then, you know, then they can become in their wretched conditions of hellish life more quickly. You know what I'm saying? Because the point is, Krishna consciousness is like a desire tree. You get what you want. You want to become Krishna conscious, you can get it. You want to become materialistic, you can get that. You know what I'm saying? Because otherwise the person would be just come kind of ho-hum materialist. Coming in contact with Krishna conscious, now you can become a, you know, very determined materialist. But, you know, so it's there, whatever you want. But what I was talking about, just how the nature of samsara works. But the point is then here you speed it up, because it's against Krishna consciousness, so that'll take you down quicker. And if you're interested in Krishna consciousness, that'll take you up quicker. Otherwise, it'll just go around over thousands of lives and go through all this. But the principle is the same. It's just whether you're following the quick path or the slow path. But the path goes both ways.
And is it that because a jiva goes into darkness, you know, more and more, that's why it has been termed as eternal damnation?
We don't use the term eternal damnation. That's a Christian thing.
Yeah, yeah.
But they don't have the knowledge, so they don't know what they're talking about. See, they call it eternal damnation because they think it's eternal. We just say they go in and they're there for a long time. I mean, just like one hell, like Kleene Bojan, you're there for 100,000 years. Like that, you know, so that's a long time. And that's one of them. And then doesn't know what you did, how many you have to go through. You know, like that. So you may have to go through quite a few. You know, before you get back into going up through the animal species. And then how long that'll take you, because depending on what you do, then there's quite a few animals you have to go through, specific. Like that. You know, it means for every 8,400,000 covers everything you can do wrong, so there's certain combinations. You do this wrong, you go through these X amount of births. You do that wrong, you go through these ones. Does that make sense? Yeah. So like that. Yeah.
When we preach to the people, we don't know. Can we say that? People, outside.
Yeah, no, it's just that. Just that, you know, our samskaras, there's a particular tone of voice and accent that's used for the people.
Sometimes?
No, it's just. Probably if you're from Princeton and you're black, then it would. You'd be able to pull it off, but.
So when we preach to those people,
yes,
then we speed up their samsara, in a sense that they will develop.
No, because we're dealing on the transcendental platform, whether they want to take that or not. See, is that if they're not inimical, they're just not interested, then they just continue along like they have. But then they, meeting the devotees has been some adhyapta sutriti.
So
you accumulate. We're talking about those who are inimical. They come in contact and they're envious of that, and they try to fight against it, like Prabhupada mentioned, the brainwashing. So those, the deprogrammers, those kind of people, they'll go down very quickly because they're actually opposed. But your common person, the innocent person, they just don't know. They are into sense gratification, and, you know, there's problems in life, and they would like those to be solved, but they, by solving them, then their material life will go nicely. So they aren't thinking beyond that, but by devotees coming in contact, then they start to think, well, maybe there's something beyond, there's something more. But it'll take, depending on the individual, how much agyata sukriti is there, it'll take for enough volume for them to actually get faith in the process. That's why you see, you meet somebody first time and they take it up very seriously. Others, there's an interest. Others, then, you know, there's doubtful and this and that. So it may take years. You know, sometimes you meet somebody and years later then they're serious about Krishna consciousness. But someone else, you just meet them and within a short, very short time. So it's just a matter of this speaking. Yeah. We're not saying that every time you contact, but that's why you're also careful about, means if you're dealing with the innocent, then it's it means you have to present nicely, you have to deal nicely. So the more you understand the philosophy, the more the presentation, the more the culture, then generally the better experience. But the general mass is generally a little less sensitive. But when you're dealing with the Naradam, it means the people who have the propensity or have the potential to be Naradamas, they're the ones you have to be really careful about. For them, you really have to, the etiquette, you really have to, the technical philosophy and all that kind of thing, because they're always going to interpret it always in the case of the political positions that are generally anti-authority. And so they're always going to, or they have their own authority, they don't accept the Vedic authority. So they're more delicate. So you generally see as Bhai Krishna's arranged where we don't really preach in that group very much. A few devotees can preach there and they do very well. But for most devotees, they don't preach in that group, because if they become upset, they actually have the determination, the influence, and the ability to make trouble. While the common person, they don't appreciate something, they're not going to really make any trouble. I'll talk to a few friends and then everyone will forget. Right? But the Naradamas, because of their false ego, they don't forget easily. And so then, Loudly.
Almost the same in the sense that there's a phenomenon of faith, that there's faith about the civilization. And then
there's
taste. For this Asura civilization.
Okay.
And then the devotees pick up Krishna consciousness, they see something higher, and then they pursue, they are very determined, and then after some years, they lose faith for chanting, they lose faith for service. And then it's as if there's no loss, no diminution, but at the same time there's this phenomenon of, like, acharyas say that it's because of offenses, that they get bad this material faith, or is it that...
Yes, it's just that that devotional interest is covered. So they just go back to where they were. See, it's when you take up Krishna consciousness, you step out of your material position. And in that, you may become more sophisticated and knowledgeable and all so many things. But it's not understood that it's just spiritual. We'll sometimes think it's material and all this and that. But now, if they step out of Krishna consciousness without an interest in it and just go back to material life, they will step back to the position they were in before they joined, much to their surprise. Because they think that they've come up and they become very sophisticated, they'll step out on that level, but no, they just drop back to wherever they were. So if they were sophisticated before they joined, they'll go back to that. But if they weren't, they go back to... You can say ultimately yes, but generally once you get to the liberated platform, that's pretty solid. Even you get to the Madhyama platform, it's solid.
And the thing that would push you forward and not...
There's a nartas, you can say. Aparad will be one of the major ones. But just attachment, all these different things, weakness of heart, any of these things, kunti nati, all of these can create trouble. See, the thing is you have the philosophy, and that's what devotees are going on. So you have the philosophy, and you have the standard practices. And so the philosophy is a direct activity, it's transcendental. The standard activities are transcendental. So as long as one is able to function continuously on that transcendental platform, then just having that much, you're good. Like that. And we've seen in the past, many have been able to do that, and they've, done well. But if someone, due to material attachments, weakness of heart, and these aspects, then they need to deal in a realm to address these material needs, other than basically you need a place to sleep and something to eat and something to wear. But if you really care about what you wear, you really care about what you eat, you care about what you stay, and you want that to be under your control, then that means then if it's under your control, you have to maintain it. You have to maintain it means you have to provide the money and the work and the facility. How does that all come? That comes from the aspect of the varna. Because otherwise, then just by the ashram thing, it in itself is complete on the brahminical level. You know what I'm saying? So you could function in that level and function nicely. You know what I'm saying? But if you want to add in the Kshatriya, Vaishya, Shudra aspects, then you have to add varna. Because the brahminical varna is performing the activities of ashram as your occupation, as the brahmacharis, vanaprasthas, and sannyasis do. The brahminical lifestyle is their occupation. Yes, so that's there. Yeah. So does that make sense? So you could. But if you extend that a little bit, then what's needed? And so then you need dharma, which is the culture. Because along with that comes all the etiquette. So in ashram, the more detailed, in other words, if you can function with that, you can function on a very minimal platform of the culture also, just the basics, because you're not dealing outside of much. So as you are focused on Krishna consciousness, the good qualities anyway develop, therefore you will behave nicely. Because if you follow, if you're situated nicely in practicing being humble, being tolerant, you know, respecting others, not looking for respect, and always being absorbed in chanting, that all etiquette stems from these positions. And the purpose of all etiquette is to be absorbed in Krishna consciousness. So even if you don't know all the technical things, you will act in a way that everybody will appreciate that you are cultured. But if you're not acting according to this, then you need the regulation of the culture to say, in this situation, you should behave like this. In that situation, you should behave like that. Means this person, you don't respect people, but at least you should be respecting the opulences of Krishna. So someone, you know, and these, so someone's knowledge, someone's influence, someone's, you know, power, wealth, fame, beauty, all these things you should respect. Even if you don't respect the common person, at least you can start by respecting these people. You start the process. Because if I can respect some people, I can cultivate that until I respect all people. Does that make sense? But if you already, by the devotional process and your purification, you respect everybody. You don't need those rules because you're already following. That's why it said the devotee is above the rules. It doesn't mean he doesn't follow them. That's how we'd like to interpret it. Oh, the devotee is above the rules. It means I don't have to follow any rule. No, it means by his devotional practice and culture, he already is following all the rules. So he doesn't have to consider, I'm doing this because this is what you're supposed to do when you meet, you know, someone of influence. It's that all living entities are Krishna's parts and parcels, therefore I deal with all of them because they're all Krishna's servants. So I'm going to deal with them nicely. Now this person thinks that they're an influential person, and so I'll deal with them on that platform. So the more experience they have, the more mature they become. You understand? But in any case, the culture will be introduced from their practice of devotional service. But if they don't take that aspect so seriously, especially these cultural aspects, maybe the sadhana, but the cultural aspects of just devotion, the basic practices, then they may find that they need culture. And so if they don't take up the Vedic culture as Prabhupada recommends it, how he says that we should deal, and what our values and what our, you know, in other words, how, like Arjuna asked, how does this person on transcendental consciousness, how does he speak, how does he walk, how does he sit, how does he do all these things? If we don't take up what the acharyas and Prabhupada are giving us, then we will just go back to whatever was our previous culture. We won't take another one, we'll just go back to that. You know what I'm saying? So wherever we were from, we'll go back to that culture. You know, if we were from, you know, from a, you know, wealthier, then we'll go back to that culture. From middle class, we'll go back to that. We're from the, you know, the less fortunate, we'll go back to that. You know, whatever it is. We're European, we'll go back to that. We're, you know, Anglo-Saxon, we'll go to that, we're Hispanic, we'll go back to whatever it is, and we'll use our values from there. We'll still practice our Krishna consciousness, but we'll use that as a culture. So that's where then the difficulty comes up, because to follow this culture, it's opposed actually to the Vedic principle on many, many levels, at least in detail. In principle, if you understand it, then you can see where it's not. But how many people understand? That how many people understand you're respecting your parents because of that position of authority, because ultimately then you have the, you know, spiritual authorities and then you have God. How many understand that? No, just the sentiment, I respect my mother and father. But if my sentiment changes or I'm not interested, what's the importance? I give it up. You understand? So it's, they'll say, no, you have to respect your mother and father. Why? Since it's only sentiment, because it's religion with no philosophy. Because that's the thing, is the modern, how do you connect the philosophy to the religion? Because the separation of it, in some cases, has been of thousands of years. But, you know, in some cases, even more. You know, saying directly Vedic, some you have to go back tens of thousands or millions before they were connected. You know what I'm saying? So it's been a long time. So they can't connect it. Well, the Vedic, you can take everything and connect it. Whatever, any aspect of Apara Vidya, it can all be connected. Because that's what it's for. It's simply the culture of those who are God conscious. You can also use it for non-conscious purposes, because that's the nature of the knowledge and skills. They're supportive, but they're supportive of God consciousness. So if you're not God conscious, they're still going to be the supportive element of our material consciousness. Does that make sense? That's why those who are into it can use the Vedic Apara Vidya, you know, as their culture and all that, and totally be not Krishna conscious, or even interested in Vedic culture. Right? In fact, there's a name for that particular group. Right? It's called New Age. Where does all these things come from? They may get them originally from India, or they may get them from the Far East, or they may get them from the Middle East, or they get them from the Druids in, you know, Heisei and Stonehenge there, you know, like that. Wherever it is, but the point is because they're into that, but if you introduce something from the Vedic, they would have no problem with it. Like, they're talking Western astrology, and you go, yes, but according to Vedic, then you have these aspects that you're not considering. They'd be totally cool with it. They go, wow, you know, hey, how can I learn some more about this? So, they don't mind these mechanics, these subtle or metaphysical mechanics, just they're not interested in God consciousness. You know what I'm saying? So that's the whole point, is that the Vedic is the perfect tool to use for the devotees as their social, economic, you know, just how to establish what's actually valuable in life. So dharma, artha, kama, and moksha. Because if we only look at social economic, then generally we only look at what's below dharma. Right? But it does deal with all those. So the physical, psychological nature, you could say, that then perfectly is addressed, and how it can address the Krishna consciousness. So you understand? So the living entity requires both the philosophy and the culture. So if we don't take the natural culture that's given, then we will go back to our own. And when we go back to our own, then because we know it's different than what Prabhupada recommends, then we have to validate it. And so to validate it, then we have to show how it's more important than what's recommended in the scriptures. So then, unfortunately, if we just do it and don't make a thing out of it, then we're just distracted. But if we actually start to make a thing out of it in philosophy, now we're starting ourselves on that path of going down and going away from Krishna consciousness. You understand? You know, that's the difficulty, because then you're opposing the Vedic version. Right? And it said there's only two kinds of people that these two kinds of people, you know, basically deal with the Vedas. You know, with Dharma and that. Those who practice the Veda, have faith in Shruti, right? Like that. And then there are those who don't understand it because of their impurity, then they're not interested. So then if it comes down to you're not interested in the Vedic culture, it comes down to these two points. You're either not very well educated or you're very attached to the mundane, which is, you know, therefore takes you away from the Vedic. It's not that there's another... Manu mentions this. Does that make sense? So, those who follow because they know the Vedas, those who don't follow because they're attached. So if you're educated, you follow. If you're not educated, attachment will remain. Therefore, you'll be inclined not to follow. So it's a scientific explanation. It's not that I'm attached to this and you're attached to the Vedic. No, it's not that at all. The Vedic is scientific. The reason we follow it's a science. Because we're not the body, so we wouldn't have a clue what to do. I'm the soul, I'm not the body. Okay, according to the body and the desires there, I'll kind of have an idea how to deal on an animal platform. Then if I want to be a little more sophisticated, I'll learn from those around me and pick up the culture that they follow, so at least I kind of fit into a greater social system. But that's as far as I can get. Only with the Vedic study I can understand Dharma and Moksha and Bhakti. Does that make sense? And understanding that, I'll actually understand Artha. You know, I'll understand economics, justice, you know, morality, sense gratification better. Right? Does that make sense? So that's the thing, is that you can get more out of it by the higher. So the thing is that means then I have to accept the Veda. And as I'm trained in the Veda, then I understand. So for us, the Veda is what Prabhupada's given us and what indications he gives to go into further. He gives the principles where the detail, he'll tell what scriptures to go to. You know what I'm saying? So then that's why it's being followed. So it's a very scientific thing. So if we're not interested in the Veda, it means we're not educated. We don't know the reason for it. So it may be someone doesn't educate and it's not really attached. Like sometimes you get those who are a little bit more intellectual. They're not really attached to a mundane lifestyle, but they're not also interested in the Vedic. So that's just lack of knowledge, lack of training. There are those who are attached, therefore they're not interested, because they don't want to give up their attachment. Right? And then there are those who are attached or this and that, and therefore they go against it. Does that make sense? So that's considered the lowest of them. That's the Naradhamma platform. Naradhamma means you're sophisticated, you're intelligent, you're maturely qualified, and you're opposed to the Vedic version. That's why they're the lowest. Generally we take the Mudha's lowest, because he's the most like an animal. But at least he's an animal. Right? But the Naradhamma is less than an animal, because at least the animal follows what they're supposed to do. Dog always follows a dog dharma. Cats follow cat dharma. Right? Frogs follow frog dharma. But Naradhamma doesn't follow any position. They just make up their own. They're sophisticated. What they decide, that's it. For them, Vox Populi is the thing. Other people do it because they want to fit in. You understand? Shudras want to fit in. So everybody's wearing this, they start to wear it, even though they wouldn't think about it and didn't even think it was nice, but everyone's wearing it, so hey. But the Naradhamma, this is what I'm doing, this is what is good, and if you're doing this, then you're special. Right? This is the standard, and everybody else is, you understand? Because they just go, they personally are very good at everybody else's expense. You know what I'm saying? So that's what I'm saying, to be able to preach to that group requires a bit more ability. Because they're totally superficial. They look at the external. Unless you can explain every aspect of why you're wearing, you know, bed sheets and why you don't have any hair and why there's mud on your forehead, you know, in a logical way, then they won't buy it. Because they don't have faith. That's another thing. You have that, means you can throw that into the mix also. You know. Like here, these are the Asuras. Right? So they're not necessarily opposed to the Vedic culture as such. They only use it how they like. So all materials still have. So all we're saying is that when you take it to extreme, when you take that you're just absorbed in day-to-day life, your sense gratification, just getting from one moment to the next, That's all animals do. So that's the mudha. Right? You're into the intellectual understanding and everything like this, but at the same time as you, and that's, you know, so it's the subtle sense gratification. But otherwise, you're just a smart mudha, right? You know what I'm saying? Because they just can't function. Right? And then your asura is, for them, is if the Vedic culture works for, they just want control. They just want power, influence. You know, things have to go the way they want. So they go the way that the intellectuals want to figure out how it goes. These guys says, no, what I say happens. You know, they're the let it be written, let it be done group. Right? Yeah. So there, they may accept the Veda, they not. If you can show how it's practical, they'll follow it. If it gets better results than not following it, they'll follow it, because they're into results. Right? And so the Naradama is just that the he does what he wants. It's only about himself, like the mudha. He uses his brain like the what do you call it? The Mayaya Pratigyana. He's in control and wants to set things up the way he wants, like the asura. Just that he's not as asuric, as powerful as him. He's not this. He's not. You understand? They're just in that. But they have all the bad qualities of all of them. That's why it's the lowest. The other ones, they have their prominent places where it sticks out. But this one, he has all of them. So that's why they're more difficult to deal with. Does that make sense?
It's actually seems like the opposition seems something very powerful, but at the same time, recently I just read the one letter to a Prabhupada where he was saying that, yes, this is war against Maya, and I work in that car house. And then he said that materially, they actually have no resources as much as we do. That's why, like, thinking that we need some bullets and rockets against them is like trying to kill mosquitoes with that.
Yeah, yeah.
They have actually
no because they're not. Because the point is when it comes to philosophy and all that, they're actually like children. Like that. They have no idea. So what's the actual standard? What's the culture? What's the this and that? They just have something that they've taken, and that itself they've developed, so it appears very sophisticated and developed. But actually, it's just like when we talk about when the creation starts, right? What does it start with? Yeah, Mahavishnu. And then what's the next step? He glances. And what's in the glance? Time, right? Okay. So right there, right in the beginning, we already know how this works. How time functions, how time influences. But in the modern concept, the most intelligent people, right, who deal in science, because we respect science so much. So of science, then the physicists, right, they can't explain time. It's time and space, they have no idea how to explain it. And because of this, then they feel that's what's lacking in their theory, so they can't make that universal theory. But time and space, we deal with that quite comfortably. You understand? So these are the most smart. Right? You know a little bit about Manu and this and that. You can talk to world leaders, no matter how big they are, and bring about the principles on which they're supposed to be functioning in their governments. Right? You understand? Ayurveda, you can talk to the biggest doctors. You know what I'm saying? That's the whole point, is that the Vedic, because that aparavidya is the top knowledge, therefore anything else that's not Vedic, they'll come to something advanced in one area but not in another. You know what I'm saying? It's like they have robots that they can do all these fancy surgeries with, but they can't cure a cold. They don't actually understand, you know, liver function. You know, they really don't know what the liver does. You know? So that's the whole thing, is that they're advanced in one area and another area not, and this and that. And, you know, it's just they catch a few things. Before, they didn't even believe in bacteria. Right? But in the Vedas, you always wash your hands. Everything has to be clean. Why? Because there's bacteria. Right? And then when they do figure it out, then the first thing, they just make antibiotics, so then that's the first thing. You just kill everything, and then the problem goes away. Yeah, yeah. So they just don't worry about all that. You understand? So the Vedic knowledge is the topmost knowledge. But the problem is it requires goodness to be able to appreciate it. You know, it's just like, let's say, a refined meal. Only someone with some training, some taste, can appreciate. The common person can't tell the difference. You know, in fact, they think that the portions that are there are kind of strange. They'd rather have it in a bucket. You know what I'm saying? So you know, that's the principle. You know, so it's like I think. You know, just as an example, like just the other day I saw something. I can't remember if it's two different things or I'm mixing it up or that. There's like two different, oh no, a couple of them. Like one, I think there's a place in South India where you can get a dosa. It's about 4 feet long. Right? So you're not going to eat that yourself, so you get that for everybody. But just the idea of this 4 feet long, it'd be so much easier if the two or three people had each their own dosa. But this, no, it has to be 4 feet long, and it's, you know, wow, you know. But I doubt connoisseurs go there, right? And then there's a place in America that makes a pizza that's so big, you know, that I think to deliver it, they have to put a special thing on the top of a car. Because you can't take it on the motor scooters and stuff. You have to put it on this thing on top of the car. You know, but that's the thing is, it's big. We're borrowing the biggest pizza in the world. Like that. That's the whole thing. Okay. Well, I'm not sure. I think there's a thing that does sandwiches like that. You know, these long Subway sandwiches that are just a mile long and that, you know, it's like, you know, one person starts at one end, one on the other, and about five in the middle or something. You know, I'm not sure exactly, but, you know. Does that make sense? So that's the whole idea is that the Vedic culture, to appreciate it, takes some refinement. Right? If it's explained mechanically, then someone who's practical can see the practical application and its superiority. But that's only because it works. And if he finds it doesn't work, he'll tend to drop it. Well, to be able to actually appreciate, you understand the principles on which it's based and how those principles connect to the ultimate principles of Krishna consciousness. That's why even if you're not making it work, you'll keep at it until you get it to work. You know what I'm saying? Just like a man goes out, tries to start a business, it fails, then he goes and does something else. But someone who understands the concept, they try again, and after four or five times of failed businesses, then now the guy's in Forbes magazine. Yeah, so then they see it's not business that's the problem, it's just how they've been doing it. But for most people, they try to apply the Vedic. I've heard devotees say, we tried Varnashram, it failed. Yeah, but I'll make the statement that they never actually tried Varnashram. That's why it didn't work. Because if you use Varnashram, it works. Because you have to understand what you're doing. That's like the person going to the kitchen and using the knife and they got cut, and so these knives are useless. This means you don't know what you're doing.
Almost like a
mid-life. Yeah. We did try that. Yeah, you understand? So that's the whole thing, is that it requires refinement. Now, unless you come from a refined background, and there are individuals who are like that, but then they may appreciate the fineness of the culture, but it doesn't necessarily mean they take up the mood of the culture. Like I knew one devotee is that very high class family from, I don't even know how to say it, the how you say it? That main kind of high class area in Paris. People live there. Something's Elysee. I mean, in English we'd say Champ, but it's Champs-Élysées. Yeah, Champs-Élysées. From there. He was from there. They lived there. You know, huge apartment. They've been there God only knows how long. You know, one of those kind of. And so he had such taste. in aesthetics and everything like that. But everything he did in aesthetics, it was French. You know, by the looks of... But, it's, you know, if you looked at, the principle was Vedic, but the detail was French. So even he cooked, you looked at it, you saw French cooking. But if you tasted it, it was Bengali. It was really far out. You know? So that's the thing, is that you might have some of that. So be there. So as you become purified, so that's the thing, in devotional service, you become purified by the process, then you get the qualifications to appreciate. That's the point, that's the difference between the material and the spiritual. Spiritual with no qualification, your qualification is that you're a soul. And so souls have, their nature is their spiritual, so they can appreciate the spiritual. That's why something like the philosophy comes around easier. The culture then requires actually material qualification, because you have to be humble, tolerant, you know, intelligent, you know, how you say, patient, all these different things to actually use it, the Vedic. The modern, you don't really require all that. You know what I'm saying? You go to a lunch with your friends, like that. You can sit there, yell and scream, snap your fingers, you know, make jokes with the waiter, and do all that kind of stuff, and everybody's happy. Right? And they'll say, we're being natural, which they are. But now you take this person and take them to one of those $2,000 a plate dinners. You know, where you wear your suit and everybody's got their place at which table they sit and everything, and it all goes according to a schedule, that you just don't sit there and start eating. You wait for everything and deal, and then the next, you know, course comes and someone gives a speech and this and that. They would say, this is totally unnatural. And for them, it is. But for those people sitting there, that is natural. Otherwise, why are they doing it? They're practical people. They know 4 hours for a dinner, it only takes 15 minutes to eat. Why would they be there for 2 or 4 hours? Because it has other things that it gets done, like making oodles of money. You know, that's where they meet all the big politicians, all the big businessmen, all the big people like that, that can help in their pursuit of money. Therefore, they're sitting there. While the other guys, they won't get any money from it, so it's a waste of their time. While they sit with their friends, they'll laugh and joke and have a good time. They make a huge mess on the table like that, and it was all good. You understand? So, but as you're purified, you can handle these things. You understand? So the Vedic's the most purified. Does that make sense? And even you're purified and you can follow it, let's say, like Smartas, but unless you understand devotional service, it doesn't give it any life. So therefore, some try to take it up, and then they have that kind of smarta mood. So it's dry, so no one likes it. You know, or they do, they're just being natural, and then it's a bit crazy. You know, and then people can't necessarily relate to that outside of that circle. So the Vedic is, it has both. It's sophisticated, but it has the taste because of the devotion. So it's the most personal. But it takes qualification. So this, we tried it, then it's not, we haven't gotten to it yet. You know what I'm saying? So in the meantime, we take up the material. So someone could say, well, since we don't have, we have to take up the material. No, you don't. You stick to the, because even if you go to the material, how long until you be successful? That's sustainable. It'll take you 10, 20 years. So if you put 10, 20 years into the Vedic and into the serious hearing and chanting and all that, why won't it develop? You know what I'm saying? So it's just where you put it. Because you're dealing with material qualification, it takes time. Because we've been given this. Right? Prabhupada talks about it. Like that. Does that make sense? Yeah, so we're seeing how to deal, how to do this. Something's gone wrong. How? Here's administrator. They're Devaki and Vasudev. They're leaving it. They're forgiving Kamsa. But in the modern thing, no, you have to hold on to your anger, because that gives you an identity. So I'm the angry person that's been, you know. So even as 20 years later, if you don't acknowledge the person's, you know, pain and their, you're not acknowledging their identity. Therefore, oh, what is this? They're insensitive. So how do you relate to people like that? How can they relate outside of that, them being the center of their own pain? How is that going to be culturally holding everybody together? No one can be happy. Everyone has to be in the dark cloud. So it's destructive. So there's the mode of ignorance because of attachment. And that touch of passion just to make it about me and what I'll get. So where's the goodness? So therefore it won't work. You can say, no, we have to do it. Yes, you may at the time, as they did. But once it's done, then you move on. In other words, when the culture has been applied, then you move on. And if you can't move on, like I've seen it. Someone's there, they're having a big level meeting, and they're discussing a project. And the person's, and so a particular ISKCON project, something that's needed in the society. And then okay, it's accepted, this project. Then they say, okay, who's going to do it? And then they mention a name. And in present day, the person is quite qualified to do that. Their sadhana, their dealings with devotees, their, you know, how they do, their qualification, they can do it. Then someone will raise their hand and say, no, no, but in 1983, he did this. And then the whole thing's thrown out. It's kind of like, it's been how many years now? The holy name has no effect, no, like that. So, so many nice projects don't get done because people won't let go. And so that's lack of culture, because it's, they're not following the Vedic. They're following something so-called politically correct. But in reality, where is the education? Where is the moving forward? Where is trying to develop pure devotional service? Since when is my attachment to whatever went wrong with me and holding on to that, and everybody has to adjust to that? When is that progressive for society? It's very self-centered. So when you get the pranamoy, it means you have to give up for others. And then dharma gives you, you know, how it's done. And then moksha, because you're the soul, you're not the body. And then bhakti, because you're a servant of Krishna. So holding on to this low level of consciousness and trying to drag everything down to anamoya, and then saying that this is what's going to be the universal, you know what I'm saying? This is the problem. And then if we, okay, my problems or my nationalistic preference or my particular cultural preference on where I stand, or, you know, whether I'm more religious or less, you know, whatever is the mundane perspective, if we use the mundane, the difficulty is if there was a possibility to work out a non-Vedic system that could hold everything together, don't you think they would have already done it in the last 3,000 years? The Greeks were smart. The Romans were practical. Between that, they couldn't have worked it out? No, but what I mean is that it's not possible. So any flavor you take, they'll do that first time and it gets a particular result. Then they see it's missing something. So then they'll switch to the other side. You know what I'm saying? You know, it's like America's liberal, gets more liberal, and then suddenly now it goes into this other side, this conservative side. And it'll go that for a while, and then they'll see that doesn't work, and they'll go back to the liberal. So that's how everything does. Everything materials out. Everything's got to be like this. Everybody does everything, then they see that's crazy. No, everyone's got to do what they're supposed to do. And then that's, oh, no, everyone's got to do what they're... It's always, that's the whole thing. There is no such thing. Otherwise, there'd be something that holds the whole planet together. So other than the principle of sense gratification, but how they're going to do that, how they're going to dress, act, speak, that no one has the same concept. So there is no universal in the mundane. The Vedic's the only thing, it holds the whole universe together. Because whatever we think, you know, from the Asuras down on the bottom up to Brahma Loka, all the 14 planetary systems, including our one, Bhumandala, they all follow the Vedic. It's all held together. Therefore, the demons, the devotees, Kamsa and Devaki and Vasa, can have common discussions because they all accept the Vedic principle. Whether they want to apply it or not all the time, that's another thing. But they do it. Here, the demons are using the Vedic principle of how to worship Vishnu and everything in its opposite because they see benefit in that. When they see it the other way, then they're performing the charity and doing the sacrifice because they'll get the piety. You know what I'm saying? So based on sense gratification, jnana or karma jnana, The whole universe is accepting the Vedic knowledge, the Vedic system. So it's the only universal thing. And in all the universes, and then in the Mahatattva, and then in the spiritual world. So basically, you know. Yeah. Does that make sense? You know, you go, if you take 9999, keep on going for a few thousand numbers, or tens of thousands, or millions of numbers, and that little bit that's left, that's us here. And the whole rest of the cosmos is following the Vedic culture. So it's the only universal thing. People don't understand it, of course they can't apply it. They don't try to understand it, how is Krishna going to reveal to them? So if you don't want some knowledge, why will you get it? Krishna is knowledge. So you don't want Krishna in this form, why will he appear? Why will he be disrespected? Does that make sense? So that's the whole thing. He reciprocates as you surrender, he reciprocates, that's all. You're interested, he'll show. You're not interested, he won't show. Does that make sense? You know, it's like somebody, they take book distribution, that's what they're totally into. Krishna shows them all kinds of things about it. They can go out, it's very natural, they're very relaxed, they're very comfortable, they're very effective, they're very influential, because Krishna reveals. Someone else that takes management, someone else takes cooking. You know what I'm saying? So whatever they take, then that's what they know. You know, so it's like Harinam. Okay, what's Harinam? Okay. And so just people get together, Madanga Kartal, and we got it, right? That's basically how all of us will describe it. Right? But, you know, in the Dundamars, that's what they do, 6 hours a day, practically every day of the year. He and Sri Palat wrote a book on aspects you can consider in performing Harinam and how to have it effective in different ways in preaching and how to... A whole book. We'll get one sentence. You know? If you ask a little more, okay, you know, get some musical instruments and this and put it together and okay, we might get up to a small paragraph. They have a book. So that's the point. Wherever you focus, that's where Krishna reveals because he is knowledge. So if we're not interested in the Vedic version, then Krishna's not going to reveal. So then we're going to say, oh, it doesn't work. No, just say, I don't know. That's the actual thing. I don't know. I don't know how it works. I don't understand it. You know what I'm saying? So that's the thing. I've seen people who are very practical. And they won't do something unless it's practical. So it doesn't matter if it's Vedic or non-Vedic. They won't do it unless it's practical. And if Prabhupada says, then that's there. So then sometimes they'll ask, why are you doing this? You know? Because Prabhupada's mentioned the principle of it, but not the detail, then you know, there's the tradition. You find they'll ask, why this? Because they don't know that Prabhupada did this. And then you explain all how it works. Oh, okay. They're fine. They may not do it, but they understand it now. You know, because all they want to just be explained. But there are those who don't want it explained. Because then there's a possibility then you have to follow it. Well, this person would follow it if it falls within the area of their interest, they follow it. And if not, then it's not their duty. They don't have to follow it. Does that make sense? You know, like Gurukul. They don't have kids. They're not married. So then, you know, it's great. But it doesn't have influence on them. You know what I'm saying? Is that what you're saying? Yeah. Is that
what you're saying? Yeah. Maharaj mentioned that when one leaves Krishna consciousness, he falls down back to the same position.
Yes.
Now, this is the scenario for the Western countries, that if the Indians, you know, when they are coming to Krishna consciousness, they are into demigod worship. And when they leave Krishna consciousness, they are into demigod worship. So, this particular cycle of samsara would change for them, because
it would change. They're following Dharma, but it's just a matter of which way they're going.
So instead of they're getting hellish life as a punishment, but then they will.
No, but then it just may take a little longer for them to get there. Means you have the Indian guy; they're not really interested in Krishna consciousness; they're just interested in their materialistic stuff. And, you know, they're trying to be kind of more modern and all that, but they still, you know, like their tradition and all that.
Yeah, we follow them.
Okay, yes, but what's their next birth?
Hinduism.
They're not devotees. and they're not actually interested in Vedic culture on Vedic culture's principles. They actually have a little bit more attraction to the Western. But if there's still some, okay, let's say you are highly impressed with the Western kind of ideals, but you still value the Vedic culture. Where's your next birth?
In the Western.
Yes. In what kind of family?
Hindu.
Hindu family. Okay? Right? A, B, C, D.
Yeah.
Right? So then, and then what happens? They continue there. If they develop interest in Krishna consciousness, then they move forward. If not, they'll just be more interested in there. But if they're vegetarian and following all those kind of things, it'll maintain their human birth, okay? Then where are they going to end up?
India.
Then they'll just be... then they'll just be a regular Westerner. But then, because they don't know anything and all that, then where's their next birth? And then they go down to Vienna. So some people go down quicker, some people take one or two births. But if you're looking at, you know, overall time, you know, the cycle of samsara, what's a few births? You know what I'm saying? If I'm dealing in $1 million and, you know, there's plus or minus 5 or 10 rupees, are you going to be worried? No. So that's all it is. So it's just a matter of, you're opposed to this, you go down. You're not opposed, you go up. So that's all, because everything's based on principles. Then the detail is done after that. Does that make sense? That's what we're trying to get at. See, if you see, the thrust of our study is always about how to understand the principle of what's working. Because if that's there, then the detail can be applied. But if we don't understand the principle, it'll sound great, but we won't be able to use it. Or we'll take a detail, it'll work in an environment that's closest situation to what was the original understanding. But if that changes, then we can't function. That's when we say, oh, it doesn't work. Because they didn't understand the principle of the Vedic culture. That's why it didn't work, because they took a few details. You know? But that does, it's just like they'll take, okay, you take the detail, okay, the husband is, what do you call it? You know, he's the authority and the wife is submissive to the husband. Okay, now, that is a detail. Men are quite happy with that one. You know? Like that. In fact, they'll take that as the overall main, probably even more important than, you know, getting your rounds done in the morning, you know, something like that. You know, the Brahma Muhurta. That would be more important that way. You know? Because we can work in chanting at another time, right? But, you know, the wife, no, it has to be like this. But what about the Vedic principles that the house is bright only when the women of the house are happy? If they're not happy, the house is not bright. So house not bright is not nice, and house bright is nice. So what does that mean? That means in the dealing with the very tall guys. The dealing then is then he has to be dealing. He's controlled, but in such a way that the wife is happy. But the wife, it doesn't say the wife has to be happy. Is that the rule? No, submissive, not has to be happy. You understand? But they'll take it, oh, it means all that. No, it doesn't. That means he has to make her happy. Name me how many men have taken that rule. You know what I'm saying? How many have taken? So are they following the Vedic culture? Because the point is, if she's submissive and follows the husband, means the husband has to be going somewhere. You can't follow something that's not... Can you follow your couch?
Believe in.
Yeah. I say it sits there, it does nothing. And the guy sitting on the couch is doing nothing. How do you follow that? So if we're following that, means you do nothing. He doesn't do anything to please you. You don't do anything to please him. And then why are they not submissive? Because you don't... They're just following your lead. You understand? So all these concepts come up because we're not following the Vedas. Then we'll try to find modern solutions to this. Though women can do this or that or whatever they like, and that will say it doesn't solve the problem at all. Because the point is where's the interaction, the quality of interaction between the family members? But if the wife can go out and get a job, fine, great. You know, but how does that improve the quality of the family interaction? So all this thing, and women can do all these different things. How does that improve the relationships? It doesn't. You know what I'm saying? So therefore, how has it been a benefit? Because the real problem's not the wife is working or not, or she can do whatever she wants or not. That's not the actual problem. The problem is people don't know how to interact. That's the actual problem. And then because of the modern civilization, or saying in general the material civilization, is that it looks to the externals as the cause and effect. But actually they are only secondary items. So relationship is the real problem, but people look at it, no, things and situations and control, that's the real thing. And it's because of that, then you come up with all these different perspectives. But it's not. It's actually the quality of relationship between the living entities and the Supreme Lord and the living entities and other living entities. That's actually the real necessity of the soul. So that being unseen, then all these secondary things are taken. Now, of course, some of them need to be adjusted, but the point is the Vedic already adjusts all those things. Right? Because this is like, how did Krishna, he's the Supreme Lord, right? So he controls everything, right? But when they're explaining how he was dealing in Dwarka with his wives, what kind of husband is he explained as being?
Henpecked.
So that's the standard. Now, the difference is he's acting as if he's henpecked, but is he actually? No, because it's voluntarily, he does that for the relationship. But he's not actually, he's still independent. So now if a husband is henpecked, that's what the Vedic culture is talking about in a negative way. But if he acts henpecked but isn't, that's the standard. So who's taking that example? Name me, you know, how many husbands understand that? You know what I'm saying? Yeah, but the point, that's the standard. So that's the whole, it already solves these problems. The Vedic solves, because the root is the problem. You know what I'm saying? You're not watering the tree, then you can have all kinds of things where you're doing this for the leaves and spraying water on and making this little, put this little steamer at the bottom to do, and you can do all these different arrangements, and they look very sophisticated and very developed, and I can give all scientific reasons and everything like that. All I have to do is pour some water on the root and the tree becomes fine. So that's the thing. We're thinking that we're going to solve the problems of the modern society by dealing with each leaf. You just have to water the root. It's actually that simple. We can say, oh, that's simplistic. No, it's that simple. Simplistic means you don't understand the details that go along with it. So the point is, if you don't understand the principle, you cannot understand the details. And so according to one's ability, then one has more or less knowledge or sophistication, he can apply it. But the point is, the Vedic culture is so perfect, you maintain the principle, and you just move from the principle to the main points, you can apply those everywhere. Even you have a sophisticated person, an unsophisticated person, but because the Vedic culture is being followed, they can both interact because the principle is the same. You know what I'm saying? That's why it's said, you come to the poor man's house, all he can do is give you a mat to sit on. But he's giving you a place to stay, he's talking nice, he's giving you something to drink or whatever he has there. You know, brings the family, they, you know, introduce, they try to do something. It's the same thing. You go to the rich man's house, then he has a fancy place to sleep, fancy food, fancy everything. But the principle is the same. The mood's not different. It's one culture. So that's why it's universal. Because all these others, they only fit a particular group. You know what I'm saying? I'm walking around Europe and London, I have not seen a rich, cultured person wearing, sports shoes, you know, these running shoes, cargo shorts, and a t-shirt. I have not seen one anywhere. I see a lot of, you know, kind of middle, lower middle class wearing. I have not seen anybody who's wealthy and from a cultural background. They're not wearing those. You know what I'm saying? Not that they're not out there in a t-shirt and a pants and a shoes and like that, but it's like they're wearing a polo shirt. They're wearing or one of these really high-end t-shirts. They're wearing nice, you know, shorts. They're wearing nice shoes. You know, so in other words, they're not wearing their outfit. It didn't cost them, $30. You know what I'm saying? So we're not saying because it's real. But what I'm saying is they won't want to talk to that other person. So what the devotees, Manasa Time, are saying is just fitting in. A cultured person will not want to talk to them. Literally. You were on the street and you had the guy in the suit and you had somebody in the cargo, you know, shorts, flip-flops and a t-shirt, and you wanted to ask him directions, and you're in a place of town you don't know. Who are you going to ask? You're not going to ask that devotee. You're going to ask the guy in the suit or the guy wearing, you know, some nice clothes, who looks clean, who's combed his hair, who's, you know, done something, doesn't have tattoos sticking out anywhere. You know what I'm saying? You're going to look at someone who's cultured. But when you put that all together, it's not very cultured. You know, not saying cultured people don't have any of these items. They just don't put it together in an uncultured way. You know what I'm saying? So that's the difference. So it's not universal. That's the thing. It's not universal. In fact, what Prabhupada said, if you're going to wear karmika, wear a suit or wear like that. That's universal. You can go to any culture, anywhere. If it's a formal setting, everyone will accept it. Even if it's an average setting. Maybe if you're out there and the pygmies out in the wild there, they may find the thing is a bit strange, but... You know what I'm saying? So that's the thing, is that you have to know what's the principle. So since the principle is it's a gentleman, therefore you have to be an up-to-date gentleman. And gentlemen don't wear that. So there's a difference between being a gentleman and fitting in. Because where do you want to fit in? Because a gentleman can go anywhere. The guy that fits in cannot go just anywhere. You know what I'm saying? You go to a good restaurant or sometimes these high-end shops or different things like that, they wouldn't let what devotees wear into the place. They would stop them at the door, literally. You know what I'm saying? So just fitting in, just, okay, you want to deal in that, you want to preach in that, great. But don't say that that's the universal and everybody should be doing it. Because a gentleman who's wearing a suit, he understands, because why is he wearing a suit? It's his business uniform. So if someone's a religious person, representing a religious tradition, and he's wearing his uniform, he totally, 100% understands that. You'd have to be uncultured to not appreciate that. I mean, literally, uncultured. Is that what it means? So the whole point is that whatever the background, you go back to that. Someone's a smarta, they join Krishna conscious, they leave Krishna, they'll go back to being a smarta. You know what I'm saying? Whatever they were, they'll go back to that. Because that's where they left. Doesn't mean they can't continue on their progress. But why are they in that position? Because of the modes of nature. So if you step out of the modes of nature, you develop a Krishna consciousness. You step back into the modes of nature, you go back to where you were. And then progress from there. That's just the way it is. So that's what we're saying. So by Krishna consciousness, you can develop the culture and character and all that to follow the Vedas because of Krishna consciousness, because of the holy name. But on the material platform, unless you're from a cultured family that appreciates these more eclectic things, then there's not a chance that you can understand it at that. You know what I'm saying? So therefore... Yeah? So stop here.
Om Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare. Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare.
Jaya Srila Prabhupada ki, Samaveta Bhaktivinoda ki, Jaya Nitai Gaura Premanandini.